I humbly seek the blessings and the mercy of all the assembled and unassembled Vaishnavas on this virtual forum today and all the eternal days to come. For you, Prabhus, can fulfill the desires of everyone, just like desire trees. And you are all indeed full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls such as myself. So my humble obeisances, and I seek your blessings. And yesterday's class, I had the pleasure of listening to, and I must say it was so very touching and moving, and I really wanted to thank Her Grace Dina Sharana Prabhu for such a beautiful and sweet class, especially the detail of how she came to Krishna consciousness and the pastime of that. It was so very relishing, and it truly brought tears to my eyes. But Prabhus, this sixth chapter is indeed a very, very sweet chapter. Sarvam Bhattacharya is one of my transcendental heroes, a truly unique personality. And the Thakur Bhaktivinod mentions that when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Mahaprabhu entered the temple of Jagannath, he immediately fainted. Sarvam Bhattacharya then took him to his own home. Now, that's quite unique. One of the principal reasons of Gauranga Mahaprabhu leaving Nadia was naturally he had taken sannyas. And why he went to Jagannath Puri was because it was near to Mayapur. And so in that way, to please Sachimata. But another very principal reason for him to establish his base at Puri was because of the Bhattacharya. Even though when in Mayapur, the Lord had never encountered or met Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya, but he had heard of him. And so due to that reason, he wanted to establish his base in Puri itself. So for the Bhattacharya to have the Lord taken to his house, someone unknown, but the Bhattacharya immediately realized that this young sannyasi is indeed a very, very special and unique individual. Now, meanwhile, Gopinath Acharya, the brother-in-law of the Bhattacharya, met Mukunda Datta and talked to him about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's acceptance of sannyas and his journey to Puri. So after hearing about the Lord and after hearing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainting and his being carried to the house of the Bhattacharya, people crowded. So many people crowded there to see the Lord. And Lord Nityananda and other devotees then visited Jagannath Puri. Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya received everyone and distributed Mahaprasad with great care. The Bhattacharya then became acquainted with Gauranga Mahaprabhu and arranged accommodations at his aunt's house thereafter. And the Bhattacharya's brother-in-law, Gopinath Acharya, established that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself. But Sarvabhuma and his many disciples could not accept this. However, Gopinath Acharya convinced Sarvabhuma that no one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead without being favored by him. He proved by Shastric quotations from the revealed scriptures, and that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Krishna himself in person. Still the Bhattacharya Sarvabhauma did not take these statements very seriously. Hearing all these arguments, Gauranga Mahaprabhu told his devotees that Sarvabhauma was his spiritual master and that whatever he said out of affection was for everyone's benefit. So even at this stage, Mahaprabhu's relationship and feeling and affection for the Bhattacharya was truly deep. He accepted the Bhattacharya as his guru, even though propounding the impersonal philosophy. So when the Bhattacharya met Lord Chaitanya, he asked him to hear Vedanta philosophy from him, which was quite unique. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this proposal, and for 7 days, as we know, he continually heard the Bhattacharya explaining Vedanta Sutra. However, the Lord remained very silent, uniquely. Because of his silence, the Bhattacharya asked him whether he was understanding the philosophy of Vedanta. And the Lord replied, "Sir, I can understand Vedanta philosophy very clearly, but I cannot understand your explanations." There was then a discussion between the Bhattacharya and the Lord concerning the authority of the Vedic scriptures, specifically the Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra. The Bhattacharya was indeed an impersonalist, but Gauranga Mahaprabhu proved that the absolute truth is the supreme personality of Godhead. He proved that the conceptions of the Mayavad philosophers concerning the impersonal absolute are incorrect. The absolute truth is neither impersonal nor without power. The greatest mistake made by the Mayavad philosophers is in conceiving the absolute truth to be impersonal and without energy. In all the Vedas, Prabhus, in all the Vedas, the unlimited energies of the absolute truth has his transcendental, blissful, eternal form. Now, according to the Vedas, the Lord and the living entity are equal in quality, but different quantitatively. The real philosophy of the absolute truth states that the Lord and his creation are inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. These are the words of the great Thakur Bhaktivinoda. The conclusion is that the Mayavad philosophers are actually atheists. There was much discussion on this between the Bhattacharya and Gauranga Mahaprabhu, but despite all his endeavors, the Bhattacharya was indeed defeated at the end. And what a tremendous defeat, because by defeating the Bhattacharya, by having him accepting the Vaishnava philosophy, the Lord made a tremendous move. For the Lord, it's like a game of chess to convince and defeat and convert all these Mayavad philosophies. And by making that arrangement, so many individuals, because the Bhattacharya, being the head pujari of the temple of Jagannath, he was exceptionally respected, even more so than the king of Puri. So by converting the Bhattacharya, the Lord made a brilliant move. So at the request of the Bhattacharya, Gauranga Mahaprabhu then explained the Atmarama verse from the Bhagavatam in 18 ways, as we know. And when the Bhattacharya came to his senses, Gauranga Mahaprabhu disclosed his real and true identity. The Bhattacharya then recited one 100 verses in praise of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And after this, Gopinathacharya and all the others, having seen the wonderful potencies of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, became very, very joyful. And one morning, after this incident, Gauranga Mahaprabhu received some prasadam from Jagannath and offered it to the Bhattacharya. Now, without caring for formality, the Bhattacharya immediately partook of the Mahaprasad. And on another day, when the Bhattacharya asked Gauranga Mahaprabhu the very best way to worship and meditate on the Lord, and he advised the Bhattacharya to chant the Mahamantra. And so in that way, Sarvabhauma was somewhat initiated by the Lord. And on another day, the Bhattacharya wanted to change the reading of the Tattu Kukampaya verse, because he did not like the word Muktipad. So this is interesting. He wanted to substitute the word Bhaktipad. So Gauranga Mahaprabhu at that time advised the Bhattacharya not to change the reading of the Bhagavatam, because Muktipad indicated the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the meaning is somewhat hazy, the Lord still mentions, "I do prefer Bhaktipad." And at this, Gauranga Mahaprabhu and the other inhabitants of Jagannath Puri became very, very pleased. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya thus became a pure Vaishnava, and the other learned scholars there followed him. So, and hence, this was truly a remarkable move by Gauranga Mahaprabhu. Now we see that this summary had been given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, in the Antya Leela, in the third chapter, we find the deliverance of the Bhattacharya Sarvabhauma and the Lord's journey to West Bengal. And it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had realized the position of Gauranga Mahaprabhu and so composed the 100 verses in glorification of the Lord, Lord Chaitanya stated that these verses should be famous as the Sri Sarvabhauma Sataka. Now, at that time, Saurabh Damodar Goswami had arrived and joined the Lord, and Saurabh Damodar in Krishna Leela is none other than Lalita Sakhi, and being Lalita Sakhi, of course, the Goswami Saurabh Damodar is indeed a brilliant singer. And when he sings, Gauranga Mahaprabhu dances in absolute ecstasy. And at that time also, another truly brilliant personality joined, and by the name of Prajumna Brahmachari had also appeared there, and he is a pure servant of Lord Nrisingadev. And it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavat that when this personality, when he danced and performed kirtan, he would look like Lord Nrisinga, dressed as a sannyasi. He's a brahmachari in saffron robes, and he would resemble Lord Nrisinga. If you imagine Lord Nrisingadev chanting during Sankirtan, when all the dancing and the singing is going on, and Prajumna Brahmachari somewhat manifesting the rupa of Lord Nrisinga. So this is what's been given to us in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. And here in this 153rd verse of the sixth chapter proves here the Lord in this verse is referring to the internal or spiritual potency or energy and the marginal potency and the external and material potency. So these are the three potencies which have been somewhat in very brief detail is given there, and we know that in the Bhagavad Gita it's described that all living entities belong to the superior energy of the Lord, and that all material elements are a part of the inferior energy. All material elements naturally are a part of the inferior energy. Now, matter is known as upara shakti, whereas the spirit soul is para shakti. Upara, para. So the soul is indeed para shakti and the superior energy. The para shakti is the superior energy. The soul is superior simply because the soul is indeed conscious. So that which is not conscious is not superior. And even if Maya is the energy of the Supreme Brahman, it is nevertheless non-conscious. Intriguing. Now in the Bhagavad Gita, the seventh chapter, the fourth verse, it's explained, Bhumirapo nalo vayu kama mano buddhirivacha ahankara iti amme bina prakritir astada. The earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, altogether these eight constitute my separate material energies. The Lord states in this fourth verse of the seventh chapter of the Gita. And naturally, the living entity, on the other hand, belongs to the superior energy of the Lord. And hence it's mentioned, apareyam itastva anyam. Prakriti vidime param jivabhutam mahabhavo yayedam daryate jagat. And this, besides these material elements, O almighty armed Arjun, there is another superior energy of mine, which comprises of the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. This is explained in the following verse, the fifth verse of the seventh chapter. Now, Krishna's fully spiritual chit shakti or potency, or the swarup shakti, and his maya shakti are opposite to each other in nature. The chit shakti is conscious, whereas the maya shakti naturally isn't. The chit shakti is self-manifest or self-illuminated. Swaprakash. Manifestation means prakash. And this swaprakash can share that illumination. But the maya shakti is neither self-manifested nor self-illuminated. The chit shakti is like, it's like the sun. And the maya shakti is like darkness. Now for us it's important to accept that the Supreme Lord's internal potency, which is active in the spiritual world, is known as Jogamaya. And by this potency, the Lord manifests the spiritual world. All the activities in the spiritual world take place by the power of Jogamaya. Whenever the Lord descends into this Mrityulok, into this material world, his appearance and his activities also take place with the help of this Joga Maya potency. Now, the relationship between Joga Maya and Mahamaya, or the external energy, the external potency, is indeed truly unique. Now, in general, Prabhus, in general conversation, in general conversation, when we use the word Maya, we mean to refer to the external potency of the Lord that bewilders these living entities. Maya means illusion, bewilderment, and bewilders the living entities who are Krishna Bahirmukh. Krishna Bahirmukh, who have turned. Bahirmukh means turned, turned away from the Lord. And that's people like me. So now there is another superior energy known as Jiva Shakti. And this is the Lord's marginal potency, or Tathashta Shakti. Now, Yoga Maya is synonymous, indeed. Yoga Maya is synonymous with the internal potency. The Antaranga Shakti means the internal potency. And that internal potency is likewise synonymous with the Swarup Shakti. Yoga Maya is also synonymous with the Achinta Shakti, the inconceivable potency, known as the Parashakti. And the Parashakti is likewise synonymous with the Swarup Shakti or Chit Shakti. So there's interrelationships going on there. We see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, second chapter, verse 12, it's mentioned the special relationship between Joga Maya and the Lord's transcendental pastimes in this Mrityu Lok, in this material world. And it's mentioned that there that the Lord appeared in the mortal world by his internal potency. Joga Maya. He came in his eternal form, which is just suitable for his pastimes. Now, these pastimes were wonderful, as we know, for everyone, and even for those proud of their own opulence. Still, the pastimes of the Lord are wonderful, including the Lord himself in his form as the Lord of Vaikuntha. And thus, his transcendental body is the ornament of ornaments. And so following that, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 21.103, it's mentioned, Joga Maya Chit Shakti Vishuddha Sattva Parinati Tara Shakti Loke Dekhoite Erupa Ratana Bhakti Korena Gudadana Prakar koilo nitya lila hoite. So the transcendental form of Krishna is shown to the world by Lord Sri Krishna's internal spiritual energy, which is a transformation of pure, pure goodness. This jewel-like form is the most confidential treasure of the devotees. This form is manifested from Krishna's eternal pastimes. And the Bhattacharya suggests that there is no form. How can that be? So at one stage, Gauranga Mahaprabhu was very affected by that. And how can you say such a thing? And hence, Srila Prabhupada, throughout all his writings, throughout all his books, has emphatically mentioned that how the impersonalists are so very blasphemous to the Lord. Mm-hmm. The three aspects of the Lord's internal potency are the Sandini, the Samvit, and the Ladini Shakti. These are the three aspects. Now, the Shandini Shakti maintains and manifests all the variegatedness of the spiritual world. And these variegatedness of the spiritual world are unlimited. And in the Lord's abode, in the Lord's spiritual abode, all the personalities and relations of the Lord are all transformations of the spiritual existence of the Shandini Shakti. So it's the Shandini Shakti which somewhat manifests the parents of the Lord, the friends of the Lord, the relations of the Lord in the spiritual realm. And when the potency of the Lord influences material energy in a perverted manner, that creates illusion, and this is termed as the Samvit Shakti. So we have the Sandini Shakti, then we have the Samvit Shakti, and Srila Prabhupada states that the product of the Ladini Shakti is simply love of the Lord. So for us, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the Ladini Shakti is of such great importance, for it is the product, the actual product of the love of Godhead, of love of the Lord. So in essence, I just wanted to touch upon that, particularly because the verse here is mentioning of these three potencies, of these three shaktis, and the purport is giving us a little bit on, it's only literally two lines, if not less than two lines in the purport. And the Vishnu Puran has been mentioned there. Prabhupada's mentioning the Vishnu Puran. Now, according to the Bhavishya Puran, the Vedas include the four original Vedas. The four original Vedas are the Rig Veda. Now, the Rig Veda has just 1,017 verses, and the glorifications of the demigods are there. Lord Indra is glorified there, Surya, Agni, and also the Veda itself describes the different sacrifices that can be performed. So this is the Rig Veda. And then you have the Atharva Veda. Atharva Veda is 6,000 verses, and it contains many mantras, the mantras are used in sacrifices in yajna. And it is said to have been written by the great sage Atharva. Hence, Atharva Veda. Then you have the Ayurveda. Ayurveda explains the rules of some religious rituals. It describes how to do a Vedic sacrifice and how to make an altar. And then you have the Shamveda. Shamveda has 1,549 verses and deals with chanting. Chanting, Sham means melody. Sham, it's referring to melody. And then you've got the Upanishads, and there are over 108 Upanishads, and mainly dialogues. These Upanishads are dialogues between sages, or between the gods and the sages to establish philosophical conclusions. So these are the Upanishads. And then you have the Itihashis. The Itihashis are the historical accounts, and the two Itihashis, and there's the Mahabharata and there's the Ramayana. And the Mahabharata has 110,000 verses. And the Bhagavad Gita is simply one chapter of that, of the Mahabharata. only the 700 verses, and the Ramayana has some 24,000 verses, and it's the historical account, as we know, of Lord Ramchandra. Then you have the Puranas, and there are 18 principal Puranas, and these Puranas consist of hundreds upon thousands of verses. And of course, for us, the Srimad Bhagavat Puran, being the Siddhant, the creme de la creme, the Siddhant of all, the conclusion of all the Vedas and the Puranas. And it's mentioned that the Chandogya Upanishad states that the Puranas and the Itihashis are the fifth Vedas, the fifth Veda. It's been, a lot of information has been given on the verses itself. And the Brahma, the 18 Puranas, we can just swiftly go through, time allows. The Brahma Puran consists of 10,000 verses and has 245 chapters. This is just the Brahma Puran. And then you have the Padma Puran. The Padma Puran consists of 55,000 verses. It's quite a substantial literature and has six parts to it. Then you've got the Vishnu Puran. The Vishnu Puran is so very identical, so very similar to the Bhagavad Puran. The Vishnu Puran has 23,000 verses and 126 chapters. And there are six parts or six cantos, one can say. And so it's a vast literature. And then we have the Shiv Puran. The Shiv Puran has 24,000 verses, quite substantial. And it consists of 212 chapters. Then you've got the Narada Puran, a very sweet Purana. And it's, the Narada Puran has 25,000 verses. And it has 205 chapters. Then you have the Markandeya. Number six is the Markandeya Puran with 9,000 verses and 137 chapters. Then the Agni Puran. There's a Purana called Agni with 15,400 verses and around 383 chapters. Then the Bhavishya. The Bhavishya Puran is the eighth Puran, and it has 14,500 verses and 575 staggering chapters. Brahma Vaivarta, number nine, 18,000 verses and up to 276 chapters. Then the Linga, then you have the smaller Puranas. This is the Linga Puran with 11,000 verses. There are two parts to it and 163 chapters. Then we have the Varaha Puran, Purana number 11, with 24,000 verses and 215 chapters. Then the Skanda, 81,100 verses. The Skanda Puran takes the lead of all the Puranas with the most information in it. A staggering 81,100 verses and seven cantos. And 2,321 chapters. Can you imagine that? So vast knowledge has been given. Then you have the Vamana. The Vamana is very sweet. It's got all the pastimes of Lord Vamandev. And these are 10,000 verses and 96 chapters. Then the Kurma Puran. Kurma is 17,000 verses, 95 chapters. I'm almost finished, too. Bear with me. Almost done. The Matsya Puran is the 15th Purana, and there's 14,000 verses in it, and 291 chapters. Then the Garuda Puran. Garuda Puran is sweet, with 19,000 verses and 521 chapters. And then the Brahmand. The Brahmand Puran, 12,000 verses and 156 chapters. And then finally, the creme de la creme, the Bhagavat Puran, the Srimad Bhagavatam, with 18,000 verses, as we know, and 335 chapters, 12 cantos. So Prabhu's, in total, there are over 400,000 verses together with in these 18 Puranas. And in total, in all the Puranas and Itihashis, there are 525,000 verses. So these are the wonderful Puranas which exist. Of course, for us, we dwell upon the Bhagavad Puran for us, because that is the conclusion of everything. So that is of the utmost importance for us. The pastime here of the liberation of Sarvabhuma, truly a sweet pastime. When Gauranga Mahaprabhu appears in Puri, and shortly after Lord Nityananda appears, and when Mahaprabhu is then taken away to the house of the Bhattacharya. And if any of you have been to Puri, it's a very nice sweet house there. And there in the courtyard, you'll find the tunnel, because the Bhattacharya had made a tunnel to straight to the altar from his house. So if he's in a rush, he'll go down this tunnel and go, end up straight on the altar of Lord Jagannath. And of course, sometimes we wonder our Gadadha Prabhu and now Ananta Gopal Prabhu, you know, they're so swift, and is there that, you never know, Prabhus, there may be a tunnel from Gadadha Prabhu's house all the way to the altar. You never know, because he's quite swift in getting onto the altar. So similar arrangement was made by the Bhattacharya. And when after the 7 days, when the Bhattacharya had literally surrendered, his heart had completely melted. The following morning, on the eighth morning, as it were, Gauranga Mahaprabhu was so very desirous of the association of the Bhattacharya that prior to the Brahma Muhurta, prior to the Mangalarti period, Mahaprabhu immediately rushes to the house of the Bhattacharya. He rushes there and he says to the Bhattacharya that, look, we have to take darshan of Jagannath. You come with me. And the Bhattacharya, now the Bhattacharya is in his late 70s. He's 79 years old, 78, 79 years old. And he's such a exalted elderly personality in one sense. And he says to the Lord, but I haven't brushed my teeth yet. I haven't taken a shower. You know, I can't wait a few moments, wait a few minutes. But the Lord was so anxious that he said, look, you are such a pure devotee. You're such a pure Vaishnav. Let's just go. So he grabs the Bhattacharya's hand and takes the Sarvabhuma for darshan of Lord Jagannath. So this was the sweet relationship. And the consort of the Bhattacharya, Shreya Devi, the Thakurani, she is such a profound, profound cook. For in Nadia, in Mayapur, the profound cook there is Sita Thakurani, the consort of Lord Advaita. And we see that on so many occasions, Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda would take prasad at the house of Advaita Acharya in Shantipur. And of course, in Jagannath Puri, the Lord would relish the prasad and take a feast cooked by the Thakurani. And she was such, she's such a profound cook. And on one particular lunchtime, the Lord is sitting alone in the house of the Bhattacharya, and he's being served a humongous feast. And I do hope that Kanaya Chandra Prabhu today cooks a huge feast for us. For at the temple, we have important Vaishnavs coming today. We have so many devotees. Of course, there's this social distancing is there. So we're expecting Kanaya Prabhu, if you are listening to this, we're expecting a humongous Chappan Bhog feast. But Gauranga Mahaprabhu is there. And he's sitting and he's honoring all these preparations. and one personality entered, and his name is Amog. Amog is the only son-in-law of the Bhattacharya. And Amog noticed that this young sannyasi is honoring so much, he's eating so much. And so he makes a comment, and he mentions to the Lord that you being a sannyasi, why are you eating so much? You shouldn't be eating this. You know, you're not controlling your senses like that. He mentions that. Of course, the Lord doesn't take this seriously. He doesn't take this seemingly offensive. He's not taking it seriously at all. However, the Bhattacharya, who was present, witnessed this somewhat critical nature of the son-in-law, Amog, and was the Bhattacharya was very affected. And he immediately removed the son-in-law. Now, in it's customary that the son-in-law is very well respected in the household. I mean, the Bhattacharya and the Thakurani had only one daughter, and literally that they were always at the house of the Bhattacharya, because the Bhattacharya's position, Sarvabhauma, is of such elevatedness, for he is the head pujari. The head pujari is so very elevated. And so the son-in-law was always at the house of the Bhattacharya. And unfortunately, on this occasion, the Bhattacharya was so affected. And he mentions that, you know, by you criticizing the Lord may not come here again for prasad. He may not come here again. We have lost the opportunity of serving him. You please leave. Vacate the premises. Be gone with you. And in the purports of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada even mentions that the Bhattacharya was insisting upon the daughter and the son-in-law being separated and somewhat divorce each other, which is in essence sacrilegious. But this is the mood of the Bhattacharya, that I no longer wish to have my son-in-law as a member of my family, for he has offended the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He is no longer invited, no longer welcome in my house. And as a result of which, Prabhus, Amog, the son-in-law, leaves Puri, and he is somewhat in exile. And this has hurt the heart of the Bhattacharya immensely, for he's so affected. He's depressed, he's despondent, he's so very, very dejected by what has occurred. And now the son-in-law Amog, still not somewhat understanding and repenting the actions which he has performed, due to that, he then gets leprosy. And leprosy is such a heinous disease. For your nose falls off, your ears go, your skin, if you can imagine this, the body is such a nuisance as it is. And when the skin peels off, it's excruciatingly painful. And Amog has leprosy, he's a leopard. The Lord is not offended at all, but the Lord, seeing the mood and how this has affected the Bhattacharya, it's affected the Bhattacharya so immensely, and he cannot tolerate such an offense to the Bhattacharya. He cannot see why the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is so very, very unhappy. And naturally, he's going to be unhappy, for a close member of his family has seemingly offended the Lord. So Gauranga Mahaprabhu himself goes to where Amog is situated in this condition of in this diseased condition. The Lord goes along, and when he sees Amog in this diseased condition, the Lord becomes so very exceptionally merciful and magnanimous, for he plonks his right foot on the head of Amog. And soon as the Lord does that, his entire, Amog's entire body is immediately immediately recovered, and fully the disease no longer exists. Everything is back to normal, and the body of Amog becomes so very, very handsome and young, jubilant. And immediately Amog receives the mercy of the Lord, and he becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. He receives Krishna Prema. He receives Krishna Prema instantaneously. The Lord then takes Amog back to the house of the Bhattacharya. And when the Thakurani and the Bhattacharya see that their son-in-law is coming back, they were in such ecstasy. And for Gauranga Mahaprabhu himself has brought the son back. Such a sweet, sweet pastime. Very, very sweet. And by just reading and understanding this particular pastime, one can then understand the attachment which the Lord has with the Bhattacharya. How attached he is to the Bhattacharya. The Bhattacharya is like a father figure to the Lord. He's this like a spiritual master. And Lord Chaitanya mentions to the Bhattacharya that he should always seek the blessings of Lord Nityananda. And for the blessings of Lord Nityananda, Gauranga Mahaprabhu mentions to the Bhattacharya that he is non-different. The Lord Nityananda is non-different to Gauranga Mahaprabhu. This is what's been mentioned. And Srila Lochandas Thakur Prabhu's time is running. But just Lochandas Thakur sings the unique bhajan of Akrodha, Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Rai. Akrodha Paramananda Nityananda Rai. Sri Nityananda Prabhu never gets angry. He never gets angry. And it's such a sweet little bhajan from Lochandas Thakur, and it's just five verses, and just wanted to share with all of you the translation of these five verses. Of course, you know, I'm not a singer at all, so you know, don't mention to me to sing it. But the five verses go like this: Lord Nityananda Rai never gets angry. He is always in ecstasy. Supreme bliss. He has no false ego. He wanders to every town and village. In Nadia, chanting Hare Krishna, dancing and offering Krishna Prema to everyone indiscriminately. Sri Nitai, this is the second verse. Sri Nitai goes to every doorstep, and knocks on the door, tap, tap, tap. He goes to those who are very distressed, degraded, and fallen. He goes to them and gives them Krishna Prema. He says, please chant, please chant. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If you do not chant, and if they do not chant, if they do not chant and shut the door, which happens, then the Lord rolls there on the ground. He rolls outside. He rolls on the ground, and he cries. And he says, whomever whomever he meets, whomever Lord Nityananda meets, catching the straw between his teeth. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He puts a straw between his teeth, and he begs that person, oh brothers, please do the bhajan of Sri
Gaurahari. He begs. Can you imagine that?
Purchase me and purchase me, he says. And purchase me and purchase me. And in the fourth verse, it's mentioned, saying this, Lord Nityananda rolls on the ground in the dust and cries and sheds tears, looking like a mountain of gold rolling on the ground. In the fifth verse, the final verse, such a merciful, merciful incarnation is Lord Nityananda. If someone doesn't develop love for such an incarnation as Sri Nityananda. Ram, Lochan says, such a sinful person wastes his life, remaining in the cycle of birth and death. He cannot be delivered. He cannot be delivered. So without the mercy of Gauranga Mahaprabhu, one cannot be delivered. And Mahaprabhu is mentioning here to Sarvabhum Bhattacharya that without the mercy of Lord Nityananda, one certainly, certainly cannot be delivered. When Lord Nityananda proposes, when he comes to Jagannath Puri, all hell breaks loose. On numerous occasions, the Lord would immediately rush. Now, when Lord Nityananda is present, he rushes to the temple of Lord Jagannath, and he leaps on the altar. And on one particular occasion, when the first time he comes, he leaps on the altar and he just embraces Lord Jagannath. And on another occasion, the Lord Nityananda, he leaps onto the altar and he grabs Lord Balaram. With elongated arms, he just grabs Lord Balaram, and the panda there who's on duty comes on and he attempts to remove the Lord. And of course, how can one attempt to remove the Supreme Lord? This panda just flies. He's like a force field protecting the Lord. And he's just pushed back and he's thrown away from the altar. And Lord Nityananda, he just holds on to Lord Balaram. He just doesn't let go. And eventually the Lord then releases his hands and takes the garland of Lord Balaram. And he removes the garland and he puts it on himself. And then he steps down, because the altar is a Shalagram Shila, is a huge, humongous Shalagram Shila upon which, Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra Maharani are installed upon. And so then Lord Nityananda, he then, steps off. He comes off. And he just the following day, that particular panda comes to the Lord. It's mentioned. This is mentioned in the Nityananda Charitamrita. And that particular individual comes to the Lord and begs for forgiveness and asks for forgiveness that. I don't know what came of me. I attempted to stop you from leaping onto the altar and embracing Lord Balaram. My Lord, please forgive me. And of course, Lord Nityananda, he laughed. And he said, no, you're simply doing your service. This was your service. There's been no offense. So Lord Nityananda doesn't take any offense. He is the most magnanimous and merciful personality that has ever existed. And I shall now stop here, Prabhus, for if there are any questions, then I'm not particularly inclined in answering any of them, but if there are any, I do apologize, I've somewhat gone over time, and if there are any, I shall take them now. Thank you, Prabhu. If there are any questions, otherwise we could then just conclude here. And in conclusion, I can just read out one particular verse before, if there are any questions, incidentally. Nityanandam, aham no me, sarvananda karam param, harinam, pradam devam, avadutam shiro manim. I bow down to the Supreme Lord, Sri Nityananda. Who is the awarder of the highest joy of all, the presiding deity of the holy name, and the crest jewel of all Paramahamsa mendicants? Okay, thank you. I shall stop here before I get carried away. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. This was wonderful. You really brought this pastime so much alive with your very
thank you
beautiful narrating skills. And we could obviously feel how dear this personality, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, is to you. And that's why I would like to ask a question in this direction. We have one from the temple room, and it kind of links with mine. First of all, what do you think? What is like the specific thing about Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya that makes him so dear to the Lord? And then second of all, what kind of specific qualities that the Bhattacharya has can we strive to develop ourselves to help us in our spiritual life? Maybe you could elaborate on this.
Wow. The intentions of Gauranga Mahaprabhu are truly unknown. For Gauranga Mahaprabhu is Svatantra. This word Svatantra is numerous in numerous occasions. It's been mentioned throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Svatantra means independent. And the Lord is completely independent. His relationship with the Bhattacharya, I certainly do not wish to speculate on what kind of relationship that would be. But Gauranga Mahaprabhu accepts the Bhattacharya as his spiritual master. And one can say that because the Bhattacharya is much older than Mahaprabhu. When the Bhattacharya met Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he was in his late 70s. Of course, Lord Advaita, his relationship, being 51 years older than Gauranga Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu accepts Advaita Acharya as a father figure, as a spiritual master figure. So similarly, when coming to Jagannath Puri, the Lord would have that very same similar relationship with the Bhattacharya, and understanding, Mahaprabhu understands that the Bhattacharya is the head pujari, and hence position is so advanced. To the extent that the Lord would not accept the company or the association of Maharaj Patraparudra. And this is the king of Puri. And as a sannyasi, Gauranga Mahaprabhu just refused to meet the king of Puri. And no one, absolutely no one, could convince the Lord. The Lord was inconvincible. For so much attempt was there, and Maharaj Patraparudra was so very much desirous of meeting the Lord, and he felt so unqualified because the king is a monarch and considered to be a materialistic person, and so Mahaprabhu was saying that, look, I'm a sannyasi, I cannot meet any materialists. Of course, these are all, superficial reasons. These are all the pastimes of the Lord. And it wasn't until Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya personally made the arrangements for the Lord to meet the king. And it was that, beautiful pastime where Gauranga Mahaprabhu somewhat accepts. Mahaprabhu is truly independent, is Svatantra, but when it comes to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord would indeed accept whatever the Bhattacharya says. So, a truly, truly unique relationship. And the more we contemplate on these relationships which the Lord had, it's truly relishing. And the Chaitanya Bhagavat gives us some detail, some information there. The Chaitanya Mangal And of course, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Thank you, Prabhu. I think I've said enough there. Was there second part of that? I may have forgotten. What was the second?
Yeah. Thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, that's really true. That's why I asked the question, you know, to relish these relationships is so treasurable. So, the second part of the question was, are there any specific qualities of the Bhattacharya that we can strive to develop to help us in our spiritual lives?
What comes to my mind is the mood of the Bhattacharya's devotion, the devotional mood. And if you see he's always constantly attempting to render some service to the Lord. The Lord has so much respect for the Bhattacharya. However, the Bhattacharya's position is that he is a humble servant of the Lord, just like Lord Advaita. The Lord Advaita, being such a senior personality, you know, just to get the attention of the Lord, he attempts to preach impersonal philosophy, Mayavad philosophy, just to get the attention of the Lord so that Mahaprabhu would chastise him. Mm-hmm. So that mood and the Bhattacharya fully is conscious that the performance of any devotional activity to the Lord is indeed rare. It is indeed rare. And any opportunity which we receive, we should grasp immediately. Any service opportunity, whether it's serving the Vaishnavas or whether it's serving the Lord or whether it's whatever activity it may be, we have to grasp it immediately and not let go of it. And so the Bhattacharya would constantly attempt to please the Lord, and naturally the Lord would attempt to please the Bhattacharya. And so when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya would take the Lord for lunch at his house, the Bhattacharya was so overwhelmed. He was so joyous, for the Lord is coming simply to his house. Gauranga Mahaprabhu would receive invitation from so many Brahmanas, so many Vaishnavas, to please come and take prasad. But the Lord was very particular, naturally. And so when he would come to the house of the Thakurani, the house of the Bhattacharya, and accept the prasad there, of course, for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, this was indeed his dream come true, as it were. You know? So that mood of service, I wish that we could have more information on the pastimes of the Lord with the Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But that mood of service is very much highlighted. It's exemplary. And hence what comes to my mind is simply grasp whatever service we can render. And things are very limited. Don't take it for granted that, you know, we can get service at any time. There are many limitations. For instance, this pandemic has limited us. For we, the last time I gave a CC class in the temple room was over a year ago. And at that point, the pandemic was just about to kick in, and I would never have thought that we would not be able to come to the temple room. So that opportunity is been taken away from us for well over a year and possibly longer. So, you know, time is of the essence, and whatever opportunity we receive, do grasp it. Of course, I'm talking to myself. I'm trying to, you know, preach to myself, as it were. Because I need to very much take that opportunity. But, you know, I'm a very lazy individual, very lethargic. My mind is just completely screwed up, and it's simply meditating on on enjoying my indriyas, on enjoying my senses, and not rendering any service. But yes, such is the mood of all the associates, all the intimate associates of Gauranga Mahaprabhu who are present in Jagannath Puri, in particular, from the Bhattacharya to the great monarch, Maharaj Bhattaprudra. Thank you, Prabhus.
Thank you so much, Prabhu. That was a very wonderful answer. And I can really say you did some great service for us today to speak in this very nice verse and enlightening us in this way. So thank you very much. And we hope to see you soon again here.
And thank you, Prabhus.
Possible life, yeah, in person.
Thank you.